even though my children are among a diverse population, and it is, mashallah, beautiful to see a Muslim community, they're still a minority when it comes to that. So it is really upon yourself to take that ownership of your children's education and build that foundation from the start, so that they can in the future be able to take those actions that Brother Bona has mentioned, to create safe spaces and things like that. I think initially, for me, it's important to create a safe space for them to safeguard their blackness, because it's being attacked in both sides. So that's it's for me, to raise children that is that understand that. And then I believe that if we are able to do that, then we're able to send children out there that understands the need for diversity and inclusion in all spaces, especially when it comes to our religious spaces. But if we don't do that and safeguard their emotion and their mental wellness by protecting their blackness and their identity from the start, it will be very difficult for them to go ahead and you know, do the things that we have mentioned. In my household, we have black, you know, dolls. I have a doll right here. I mean, making sure that, you know, my daughters, they have to see themselves, whether it be in the books, whether it be in the toys, in every single thing that we introduce, making sure that they are featured and they are celebrated. And this is the reason why I chose to write Muslim children's books that have African features. They have to have African features, because the other ones don't.
Mm-hmm. Now, 100%. And I think, just to your point about, you know, the embracing their blackness and kind of cultivating that, because again, you know, Brother Michael and I were from the same country, we're from Zimbabwe. I grew up in Africa, and I know that that's a different, I know that we are privileged, those of us who've grown up in Africa, we have that privilege of having seen it differently, having had lived a different experience. I'm sure anyone who's in here listening, who's watching this, who grew up in Africa, you know that the experience that we had of growing up at home is completely different from people in the diaspora. But obviously, when you come to the diaspora now, you are just black. Okay, that's right. It. And with all the labeling on top of that. And so I know with some Muslims, the way you're speaking might rub them up the wrong way. What do you mean, hold on to your blackness? Like, what's this about? This is racist, you know? Like, who cares about blackness? It's about being Muslim. Islam comes first. Muslim is the most important identity. And so, guys, I want you to speak to that. But something that you said made me, sister said, I didn't know my blackness until I came here. 100%, right? But to speak to that point is, I think a lot of non-black Muslims fail to understand that your blackness is you. You can never escape it. So to say to somebody, your blackness doesn't matter, you know, your blackness is not important, it's your Islamic identity that's important. And I've heard sisters saying, who have mixed children, saying, in my house, we don't talk about race. Like, there's no race in our house. My children are Muslim first and nothing else matters. Culture doesn't matter. Background doesn't matter. It's all about Islam. What do you guys think about that?
I want to jump in here.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I feel like there's two stories being told here. Okay, there's the story of the Afro-American, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Canadian people, and the story of the brothers and sisters that have migrated from Africa and, you know, have come to, you know, Canada, America, England, and I feel like, even though on the outside everyone's looking in and thinking they're all black people, it's a very different story, because I'm hearing, like, you know, learning about your African identity and bringing it back to Islam and, you know, these sorts of things. But for children who are coming from generations of living in the West, it's so far removed. It's so far removed. And a lot of the times it's their parents who've converted, or, you know, even older people who've converted themselves to Islam. They are now, you know, taking this on inside them and, you know, for themselves. And because Islam is such a community religion, it's also other cultures are being thrust upon them, right? Mm. And you're not included in those other cultures,
even Arabization if, or, you know, becoming Desi and the food and the clothes.
Even with the other Black brothers and sisters, if you're not included in those other cultures, like you're not Somali, you know, for my kids, you're not Somali, you're not Sudanese, you know, you're not Nigerian, which Nigerian is like kind of on the lower end of the spectrum, you know. I mean,
No, Nigerians rock, I'm sorry. Up in the UK, Nigerians run things. Like, they just run everything. Put in the chat, guys. You guys know, in London, in the UK, Nigerians, Muslims run everything. That's it. That's all I have to say. But yeah.
You know, in Canada, that's not really the situation. In Canada, it's the Somalis, okay? The Somalis are identified as the Black Muslims in Canada, okay?
Right.
If you are not a Somali and you're a Black person, then you're not a Muslim.
Wow.
Like, if I went into a mosque and even if I went into a Desi mosque, a majority brown mosque, and somebody was, I would say, oh, I'm Somali. They'd okay. You know, they might still, be prejudiced towards me to my skin color, like, you know, friending, being my friend or, you know, those kind of things. I would still experience that. But I wouldn't experience the spiritual racism that happened because they would think at least I know something about my religion. There would be less correction of Islamic practice that I would have to endure, you know, because I'm Somali, you know, I'm from one of the Muslim, you know, cultures that are in Canada, right? So there's a big divide there, right? And I don't know necessarily how it is in America. I mean, like I do have relatives and friends who live in different parts of America where, because there's more of like a segregation, I feel like the Black people who go to lots of Black, go to mosques or have communities that are more Black, densely populated Black people, there's more of a community feeling, right?
As in Native Black, as in African American Black?
Yes, African American, sorry, African American. So it's more of like a safe space there. But in Canada, there isn't really anything like that. So going to what Buna was asking, like, you know, Black only spaces or Black, you know, Muslim spaces. And then he's saying we should, you know, come together. I feel like in the end result, yes, that's definitely what should happen. I mean, me growing up here in Canada and I had like a handful of Pakistani friends who used to come to my house, and their parents actually allowed them to come to my house, which is a big deal. But it's probably because my dad was the imam, so that's probably
imam privilege. Imam's family privilege.
But I did see as they grew up, their prejudice and the racist notions and stuff like that that were being put up on them by their parents. They because they were our friends, they hung with us, you know what I mean? They saw our nappy hair, you know, they were there with us in all our essence and all our Blackness. Okay. So as they got older and how they're raising their children is very, very different from other people who, you know, were around us basically in the community, but still had those notions and those ways. So I feel like eventually it will happen because we're all blending together and, you know, inshallah, we're going to break it down. But I really feel like for Canada, it needs to be the acceptance of the other Black Muslim cultures, bringing in the Afros, okay, bringing in the Caribbean, bringing in and uniting like that before we can really do anything about what's happening. Like, for, you know, so we can, you know, spread that to the rest of the Muslim community, really. Like,
There's a big, there's a lot of chat, which we can't even go into the chat. Guys, I'm going to tell you about this chat thing, inshallah, by the time we finish. I'm going to tell you where we can make this happen, because I know everybody here has something to say and wants to speak and share their views. But what I will say is that, you know, as we said about the generations, immigrants, first generation immigrants, they are going to cling to their culture and cling to their people and cling to their language. And they're going to want to go to a place where they are understood. Like, we all want to be understood, right? Like, we are now, what, second generation? Most people here are like second generation. And a lot of us here, I call us the OGs, because we are, where there's these millennial ones are the ones coming after. We're like the OGs. We're like, oh, 40s, in our 40s. We've been on the deen for like, you know, some of us been active for about 20 years or so, mashallah. So our identity is different. from our parents' identity, and our children's identity will be even more of a melting pot, I think. But coaches, please jump in, because you've been waiting very patiently. And Brother Michael, you're going to just have to unmute and jump in there, inshallah.
All right, a couple of things.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go back to what Brother Bruno was talking about as far as the safe space. Totally believe that should be safe space. Here's the thing. I remind me of, and my co-wife and I, we were talking about how, yeah, it is different in America. Like, we're hearing so many things where it's like, okay, the UK says this and Canada is here like this in Canada. But seriously, here, no, it needs to be Black safe space.
Yes,
it and does. When we think about, and when we talk about Black, we're talking about Black. You're Black, you look like us, you're Black. Is that, you know, and it was an interesting thing when the other sister, I'm sorry, but Bakis was talking about when it came to where it's just like, if you're Somali or you, it's like you just look, it's like it's a totally different thing.
Yes.
And they're saying, well, you're not Somali, or you're not, you know, Nigerian, or you're not this, so you're not included. A lot of people from America don't know where they are from. Like, we don't know if our tribe is, you know, Nigerian or this and that and the other. So the thing goes to the point where it's like, we're going to go back to what Brother Michael was saying about knowing your history and different things like that. But a lot of young African Americans do not know country of Africa they're from. So the thing is, when we say Black is Black, it's like Black is Black. We're all from Africa or whatever the case may
be. That we know for
and,
sure.
Right. And so we build on that. You know, we build on this togetherness. When we talk about things being inclusive or being, you know, non-inclusive or whatever the case may be, it reminds me of the sister who, and I don't know if she's sister is Muslim, but she's sister is Black. She has a place in Costa Rica where she is these retreats, and it is where is Black only. Like, can't nobody, you, if you're white, you're not included.
You can't come. And she says you can't come.
You can't come. And the thing is because she talks about the systemic stress and the trauma and the things that we go through. Just like what Rahma was saying about now she sees it's from both sides. We're fighting for our Blackness on both sides. So when you're constantly going through that trauma and that stress and that thing, you need a place where you can release, where you can have some type of relief, where you have people that are on your side, that have people who have dealt with what you're dealing with, or at least can understand what you're, where you're coming from, and not pity you because it's like, oh, so sad, poor you. But it's like, okay, I understand this. This is what we need. We're going to lift each other up because that's what we need to do. My co-wife and I were constantly saying, you know, we need to do better. We need to do better. We need to do better. We need to do better as a people. We need to do better as a community. We're Black. You know, and it's, you know, a lot of like Bruno was talking about where, you know, it's a fear of, you know, being so pulling where we're this and just kind of cliquish. That's where a lot of the issues are coming from, being totally cliquish and saying, you know, instead of stating that we are all together in this. And that I had to pause for a second because I read an article. I forgot this lady's name, but she did a book. And she said she, and a chapter in it was talking about the cousins, where how Africans talk about the African Americans as the cousins. Oh, the cousins are acting up again, or what are the cousins doing? And these type of things like that. We, as a people, we need to stop this, because if we're talking about raising Muslim children or raising children to be strong in their identity, we as adults, or we as the parents, or we as the people who they're looking up to, need to stop dividing ourselves. Right. Because how can we teach them something that we are not following as well? That part. And the Black versus people of color, because people say Black and then they start, you know, going off on other things, on other tangent, because people of color just sounds more trendy. So, you know, you could be a person of color one day and then you can be whatever else you are the other day, whether you are Egyptian or
interchangeable,
whatever the case may be. But when you're Black, you're Black. It's what it is. It's not one day I'm this and the next day I'm something different. And we're constantly fighting the narrative. Mm-hmm. Like when it comes to it, we're fighting the narrative instead of creating and teaching the narrative, teaching what it is. So when it comes
Hold on, sis, just one second. I need you to say that again, because I think that goes back to what we were talking about control. And taking control of, you know, what it is that we want our children to do, et cetera. So can you just say that again about fighting the narrative?
Yeah, we're constantly fighting the narrative instead of creating and teaching the narrative. So the same thing when it comes to in school, where schools are saying that this is what the history is, like we talked about earlier, where it's like, oh, okay, this slave that, and this is where you came from. It's like, it does make the generations who don't know the history or who are not to not be proud of where they came from. Yeah. So they're like, okay, I don't want to be this. So yeah, I'm 1/8 Indian. You know, just the people that say, well, I got Indian in my family, because it's that's actually a thing in America. I don't know if that's anywhere else.
That's a very American thing.
Where it's a thing where like, you want to be something else other than Black. So you're always putting where I'm part of this, I'm part of that, and I'm part of this. And it's not only to be inclusive and to include your other cultures, it's to actually say, well, I'm not just Black, so I'm this too. So make sure that, you know, you see this part, not my Blackness.
I think it's definitely, it's on the cards to have a conversation about not just interracial marriage, but also, you know, multiracial children, of which we have many now in the Ummah. Certainly my generation, our generation, has probably been responsible for, you know, the largest number of mixed race children in the Muslim world, except for maybe if you go back to the maybe Abbasids or something like that. I don't know. Maybe the Moors in Spain. I'm not sure. But, you know, our generation specifically have intermarried at a huge rate. So we will be having another conversation about that, because some people have brought it up in the chat.
They asked about, they said something about prejudice in childhood. Could any of us talk about that? The interesting thing is, when I can think as far back as prejudice in my childhood, it was from my own. It's from people that look just like me. Mm-hmm. And I said, we need to do better and, you know, teach our children how to be helpful and inclusive when it comes to people who are like us, who look like us, instead of tearing people down in order to build themselves up, because the narrative is that we aren't good enough. So it's like, well, I'm good enough, but you know, you're not this way, or you're this way. So we gotta be, we just definitely gotta do better on that. And it's like, I said, it's basically controlling the narrative instead
taking
of
back that control. Yeah, taking back that control, 100%.
Can I just say something really quickly, two quick things. My daughter went to she went to college, and there's a Black advisor there. And the Black advisor got in trouble, and the dean reprimanded her, and she said, you know, you gotta not be so, you know, militant, or, you know, try to tone it down. She said, I don't want you to mistake something. I'm here for the Black students. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, how are you gonna be in an all-girl college here just for the Black students? She said, because the white, she said, I'm here for the Black and brown students, because the white students have you all. These women don't have anybody on this campus for them. It was a Catholic college. And also, I recall years ago, my aunt told me something. I've never been to New York. I don't really have a desire to ever go there, but she had been there. And she said, you know what they call us Black people in New York? And I said, what? And I'm thinking, you know, they calling us nigger like it. They call us that all over this country. She said, no, they call us Mondays among each other. And I said, Mondays? She said, yeah, because nobody likes Mondays. So they'll say, the Mondays.
Really?
There's so many Mondays. Don't you hate Mondays? They have these cold words in this country. We have to, it's interesting that we have to try twice as hard and learn we have to learn all these different insults and these, you know, these cold ways of speaking to educate our children on those things, to know when they're being insulted. Because it's not so out there and so up in your face. It's very subtle sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Buna, did you want to speak to that? You gave Buna something to laugh about there.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I've been to New York a few times, so yeah, I heard that phrase. It's something that it's not just in New York, actually. It's all over. It's more of like an East Coast term. But I wanted to say something, and I didn't want to jump cue. you know, and I want to go back to this point again, and I was reading the chat box about this notion of spaces, and I think this is an important point. I don't want to lose focus and momentum on it. Oftentimes, when we think about Black spaces, I don't want these, and I love this concept, and I love this notion of Black spaces, but I don't want these spaces to remove our individual identities and our backgrounds and our experiences and our struggles. I'm one of the few people that's, I traveled a lot, and I've been to the US, and I've done a lot of work in the UK, and so I have good experiences and can relate to a lot of the different nuances that you each are talking about in your own respective countries. In the US, for example, you know, you have the African American population, which is distinct from in Canada, where you have a major East African population that is the majority of Black people. So in the US, I've been to many just African American masajid, and it's a beautiful thing, but you wouldn't see that normally in the UK or in Canada. That phenomenon doesn't exist, where there are African American or African Canadian or whatever, those particular spaces. And my own fear is that we would take that experience of African Americans and we would bring them to an East African space, and we would remove their experiences, their culture, their history. Mind you, us in the West, our entire identity as Black people is based upon the African American experience. I mean, because we would not be
the same, basically, because we
I'm saying that we would not be even in this country if it wasn't for African American people, right? If it wasn't for the struggle, for the sacrifice of these luminaries, people who paved the way for us. The African American struggle paved the way for all immigrant groups to immigrate to the United States, to Canada, anywhere around the world. Black liberation, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, these were moments in history that enlightened the entire world. So I would want any African American child to not lose that, to feel like that is a part of their identity, to feel like, wow, we love Black music. And when we say Black, we mean African American. We love Black culture. We love African American taste and entertainment, all these things we take from them, our style, the way we dress, the way we talk. But it's like African American history for us sometimes becomes something that we want to minimize, and we think about slaves and we think about all these things, and that becomes the part that people don't want to inherit. And that's why you'll find many Black children, African American children, they may not want to associate with that. But I think as a community, we need to embrace the diversity in our Black experiences, right? That our being Black in my space and time is different. Sister Naima grew up in Africa. I didn't grow up in Africa, right? It would be naive to assume that our experiences are the same. They're very different. They're very unique. I grew up as an immigrant child who could not speak to my parents in their own native language. You know how awkward that is? That's a completely different world that many people would not be able to relate with, right? So the problem I have with quote unquote Black spaces is that they are often missing of these nuances. They completely miss the mark on these nuances. We're not all the same, but we're all beautiful. And our beauty is in our collective experiences is what makes us beautiful, right? And you have Black people you have Black people, first of all over the world. It's not even just relating to, you know, where we are. You have African American people, you have Afro-Latino people, you have people from all around the world who identify with our similar struggles and strengths. So I think as a community, as Muslims, we need to embrace this idea that all cultures have something of value, all cultures have some beauty within them. And that's what truly makes up the beauty of Bani Adam. We're all from one creation, right? But I don't want to create a space where I feel like, and this, I'm just doing this for some controversy, and I want people to start thinking and talking aloud, because I don't want to create a space where I feel like I cannot accept the contributions of the African American people or the African Canadian in Canada alone. Again, we're based upon the contributions of African Canadian people, people who've come from the Caribbean, people who were brought here as political prisoners. These are their histories is what allows us to enjoy the luxury that we have today, where I can speak, I can stand, I can enjoy who I am because of these people. I don't want them to lose that, because I feel like that's a part of my collective history being here today.
No, I agree with you. And I think just to speak to that, my experience of Black spaces has literally been, I think, in the last 5 years in London, specifically in London. Londoners here will know what I'm talking about, but there has been this growth in especially Black sisters, forming businesses, forming organizations, putting on events. They're not Black events, but typically because they are set up by a Black woman, she invites all her friends who invite all their friends, and then their aunties come and their mums come, and it ends up being a Black event with a sprinkling of, you know, Arabs and Asians and some white sisters and lots of reverts there. Now, my daughters, we went to an Eid party that was organized by one of these organizations, mashallah. And it just so happened that it was majority Black. And in this case, you had sisters from all over. You had Somali sisters, you had Kenyan sisters, Nigerian sisters, Caribbean sisters, all sorts. And my daughter said to me, "This is where I feel at home." And I said to her, "Why?" She said, "Because when I'm here, I want to take my scarf off because everyone's got hair like mine. And we look amazing. Everyone looks beautiful, mashallah. People are like, you know, we like the same types of things to dance to. If we're having an Eid party, we've got the duff and we're going for it. And the energy, and I don't know, maybe this is my own thing, but I do feel there is a different energy. And my daughters have that energy. It's part of who they are. So they love to be in that Black Muslim space because they can be free. Now, contrast that to a place where the dominant culture is, for example, Desi, not Arab, because Arabs, she has familiarity with Arabs, she grew up in Egypt. But with the Desi event, she feels self-conscious about her hair, she feels self-conscious about her dress, maybe she's not dressed like the other girls. And I think it's natural for human beings to want to be in a place where they are understood, where they just belong, you know, and there's no, like, no intrusive questions, you know, no one trying to kind of understand. So what is that again? They just get you. So I think Black spaces doesn't have to be as much of an erasure as you're saying, Buna, because no one is being erased in the Black spaces that I'm familiar with. I don't know what anyone else's experience is, but certainly in my experience, those Black spaces, all it means is that it was set up by a Black person. And she or he invited all their friends. So for example, Hafsa Dabiri, who was with us, Dabiri, who was with us last week, she does make a lot of, you know, amazing contributions as a Black Muslim millennial. And she attracts her people to her, right? And those spaces are inclusive. People who want to know, they go there. But our vibe is there. Our energy is there. Our cultural markers are there. And there's no shame in, yeah, we're Muslim and we're Black and, you know, it's lit. And, you know, I'm not going to try and embarrass myself by talking all the millennial slang, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so anybody want to jump in on that before we need to wrap up? Because I don't want to keep here. Brother Michael, go ahead.
I wanted to point, rather to say something that has already been said, but to emphasize that Islam really didn't come to erase Blackness or erase people's cultures or people's races, but to celebrate them. In fact, one of the secrets of the spread of Islam is that it accommodated the cultures that it encountered. It didn't try to erase them completely. And that's why you find Islam, you know, spread everywhere. And we like often to make the slogans or to say the slogan that Islam is universal. How can it be universal if you're trying to impose an Arab culture or a South Asian culture on people from Jamaica, for example? It can't be that universal. And also to say that people, to tell people that, well, you know, forget about Blackness, only focus on Islam. You can't tell someone to forget about their Blackness when the Islam that you are introducing to them is one that has been mediated through a South Asian culture, for example. What about their, you know, if you are talking to a Jamaican and then you're telling them to forget about their Blackness, that they should only focus about Islam, and you're introducing to them an Islam that is saturated with qawwalis and everything, and you're telling them that their,
100%.
You know, their spoken word or their, you know, their lyrics, whatever they do in their culture is not Islamic, you're preventing them from performing poetry without music in your mosque, and while at the same time you have Qawwali events. So really, I think this is the part of the problem, that you have a cultural imperialism where it has absolutely nothing to do with Islam, but people invoke Islam to impose their cultures on others. They try to, whether it is Arab culture, they're trying to impose on you, whether it is South Asian culture, and they're trying to tell you to forget about your Jamaican culture as if it can't be or it is not part of Islam, when yet we know that Islam throughout the centuries has been mediated through cultures. And in fact, the local cultures known as Uruf in fiqh has become an important tool of interpreting the law, you know, in Muslim societies. Fuqaha adopted local cultures as they tried to explain the fiqh to those people. So I think people, whether they are from the African Americans, whether they are Jamaicans, whether they're Africans, Somalis, whoever, they have to know and accept, or rather understand that their cultures are valid Islamic cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to embrace someone else's culture. And I think that's all I wanted to say on this topic.
No, I think what you said there about the cultural imperialism is a huge issue, and it's one that we, inshallah, will be addressing in the next virtual salon session, where we're going to be going to education, and we're going to be talking about the decolonization of the Islamic studies curriculum and of Islamic studies history. And I think there is still so much. We're going to be talking about education. We've been talking about, you know, literature, and representation within literature, and you know, options open for Muslims, inshallah. But can I just get a last word from the panel? Because what we're going to do now, inshallah, is we're going to wrap this up, and then we're going to open the floor, because there's some people who've had their hands up, mashallah, and you know, I want to hear what people have to say. So on the subject of raising our children Black and Muslim, what is one thing that we can do? Because this space here is not meant to be an echo chamber. This space here is for us to explore the topics, for us to get ideas and then implement them. Because ideas without implementation, it's just a waste of time. And I wouldn't expect you guys to keep coming back week after week and my guests to keep coming week after week for us just to talk. Let's see some action. Yeah, so in terms of action points, I'd like to just tell everybody that inshallah, Brother Michael and I have booked, have agreed to book a time where we're going to do a podcast, and I'm going to do an interview solely with him. And that interview will be especially exclusive content for our patrons, which I will tell you about later, inshallah. But I think that there are so many questions that have come up just from a few times of hearing stuff that, you know, what you're saying, Brother Michael. So I think we need to really do an in-depth interview, an in-depth conversation. So that is, there's more to come. There's so much more for us to discover. So just quickly, before we wrap this up and go to Q&A, guys, what are your final words of either something that you are going to do or something that you want people to know? The people who are watching this, inshallah. When it comes to raising our children, Black and Muslim.
Okay, one thing I would say, real quick, here I go. One thing is, people keep saying melting pot, keep hearing melting pot. When we teach or change that into looking at it as a gumbo, because melting pot, everything melts. You don't know where it came from, who was what, and everything like that. Right. When it's a gumbo, you know what is, you could tell what is what in a gumbo. Yeah. So that's one thing to be able to, like Buna was talking about, having your individuality. Mm-hmm. I get that. That's not taking away from having a Black space. The one thing that we can do, what I would think that we should do, is first make sure that we are intentional and transparent when it comes to our children, when it comes to teaching our children.
Yeah,
there are a lot of things going on. Learn about our history, learn about our strengths, learn about the powers that we have, and teach them. We learn it first and learn to teach, not learn to just keep it to ourselves.
Perfect. I love that. Brother Michael?
Yes, I think you know, it's hard to add to, you know, to the, you know, extremely important contributions that have already been made. And I'll just leave the floor, you know, for questions. I may take maybe one or two if there are any directed at me, and then I have to leave, unfortunately, because I have other things to do. I have maybe about 10 minutes or so. So I'll, you know, pass the mic to someone.
Pass the mic. Okay. Rahma, final words for our...
Yeah, I think final words for me was it's great to have this discussion and see other Black Muslim parents how they deal with the same concerns that I have. What I take away is utilizing the power of the knowledge that I have and making sure that I am raising children that are conscious of their worth, making sure that I'm raising children that are aware of, you know, the dangers that are out there, but also making sure that I'm raising children that are, you know, value themselves. If you raise children that value themselves, they'll be able to recognize and value others. So that's what I'm taking home. I'm very excited, inshallah, to be starting this journey of homeschooling and having that much more power and more influence into shaping the mind of my children, inshallah.
I love that. And to be honest, I'm just going to give a quick disclaimer. If as a result of the virtual salon, we have like a revolution where we have new families deciding to take back control of their children's education and buying a whole set of new types of books and reading new types of books and having new conversations with their children, I will be so happy. That will be like, yes, that will be winning for me. Last words, Bilqis, then I'll go to you, Buna.
So just from my own experience with my children, what I really try to do, and inshallah, I'm hopeful that I've been successful, is really honing in on developing their self-esteem. And their self-esteem as just being a human being and a servant of Allah, you know, and being the best they can be and not really giving them limits that the world would be placing on them once they get into the world. Like really having them look at the world in a way where they are completely valued and they, you know, they have no limits and no one is going to restrict them from certain spaces or whatever. And this is when they're young and really doing it in a way where it's strategic and constant. So you are doing it in like just little moments, you know, different experiences that they have and just being always there to remind them of their worth and the fact that they don't have to fall to what society is trying to tell them that they can't do. And then just to teach them that they're beautiful. Like, you know, Allah has given them this body, He's given them the features, He's given them the skin, the hair, and Allah is, you know, He creates things in perfection. So whatever they have been given is a gift, and no one can tell them that it's not beautiful, and just for them to feel confident within their skin, you know.
Inshallah. Jazakallah khair. Yes, Buna.
Yeah, I think just to piggyback off what Sister Bilqis has said, you know, I think raising children that have healthy self-esteem, being Black in the West, I think is of utmost importance. Many times our children live with this notion, especially when they look around them and they watch television, they watch movies, they read books, and they're not represented. Many children start to, we all know this, you know, we start to build this feeling of ugliness, of, you know, we're not the dominant culture, we're not the people that you typically see as beautiful. I make it a point and a habit of complimenting my daughter like 50 times a day. You know, as a father, I tell her, oh, you're so beautiful. Look at your hair. Recently, my daughter typically braids her hair throughout the school year. This is easier to manage, but like she's been at home now. She lets her hair out. And I keep telling her, wow, I love your hair. Look, it's so beautiful. Look, it's so nice. And I could see the effect actually it has on her. She's become so much closer to me in these last few weeks being at home. And my wife talked about it. I said, why is she acting like that? And my wife say, I think it's because you keep talking about her, how beautiful her hair is. And she really, really likes it. And I think even though it's subtle as a father, sometimes we don't think of those things, but I know that that has an impact on her because she's constantly surrounded by a world that is indirectly or directly telling her she's not beautiful. So feeling like children have that. I had this funny anecdote. I'll share this. I used to live in a very diverse apartment building when I was younger. And I had a Greek neighbor who was, she was much older and she had a son who I used to play with sometimes. So I used to spend a lot of time at their house. When I was younger, she used to always tell me, and this might sound strange, but she used to always put her arm next to my arm and she used to look at my skin and say, wow, your skin is so beautiful. I wish I had the color that you have. She used to call, I don't know if she was trying to molest me or what, because it's now looking back at it, it sounds a bit weird. But she used to always compliment my skin and my complexion. And mind you, they're all white. They're all pale. But her saying that built a level of confidence in me growing up that I felt like, wow, she always told me, I wish I had your skin. She told me she used to spend all day out in the sun just so she could look like me. And that does a lot to children's confidence. And my son specifically, you know, and this is a whole different conversation, but like black boys' hair, how we stylize their hair, what hair we look at even in the Muslim community as being Islamic or haram, or, you know, when a boy grows his hair out and he decides to do something with it, all of a sudden he's imitating the kufar. But
brother Buna's going there. Oh, my goodness.
No, but I'm being serious, right? Like, natural black hairstyle many times is criminalized. It's something that is seen as inherently haram.
Yeah.
For many black people. So telling my son and showing my son, you know, you can do whatever you want with your hair. I wish I had parents like me, because I know when I was young, I wanted to wild out, but my parents never let me, right? Yeah. But telling my son, you know, you do whatever you want with your hair. You can, you know, braid it. You could do this and that. And it's important, I think, to build that confidence and showing them that naturally they are beautiful.
Yeah. Do you think as well that the more confident our children are in their Islamic knowledge, the less shy they will feel when other people are made uncomfortable by what they consider to be un-Islamic? Because a lot of people, it's true, a lot of aspects of our cultures, people do look at that and say, no, that's imitating the kuffar. That's haram. That's not from Islam, etc. Whereas, do you feel like if our children know the roots of that and they know where that came from? And I know Brother Michael has talked about dreadlocks before, and he's talked about companions having dreadlocks. And that, of course, for many people is like, say what? Yeah. What are you talking about? This is for Rastas, Jahil, Haram, Astaghfirullah, right? But if your child knows, excuse me, no, you can't tell me that, because I already know the isnad of this. I know the proofs behind this. Do you feel that that's also something that we can do?
Well, 100%. Many times you'll hear kids say, oh, my parents told me that this is wrong, or my parents said this. And I don't care what your parents said. What did the Prophet ﷺ say? What did the ayah say? If you can tell me that as a child, and you can bring to me or present to me your dalil, your evidence, where did this come from? Then you might have an argument. My kids, for example, and this is, I'll put myself out there, okay? I believe eating the meat of Ahlul Kitab is halal, okay? This is my personal opinion. This is the scholars that I follow. In the UK, this is blasphemy, by the way. You can't say this. In the US, it is aslan. It is, nobody cares. Most people, they don't mind. If you're eating Ahlul Kitab meat, if you eat meat from the Christians or Jews, no, people don't mind. So my kids, they're my kids, so I let them eat whatever I eat, right? I don't have a problem. I believe this is to be permissible, so they eat what I eat. Their friends, might ask, or I tell my kids, I'll take them to McDonald's or something. And their friends will say, oh my God, you went to McDonald's? How? How did you guys go to And then they'll explain to them, well, this is, you know, we believe this and such. And then I'm like, look, at this point, I've done my due diligence. You know, I've taught them, they've learned, whatever. At a certain point, they can make their own decision, right? Under my house, it's my rules. We do what I say. I'm the imam, right? But when you get older, you can make your own decisions. That's fine. We can disagree. But it has to come from Islam. It can't come from my culture. This is what my parents taught me. This is what... Then you sound like the Jahili Arabs. Then you sound like the Quraysh. You used to say, oh, how can we follow the religion of Muhammad when our parents used to do this and our parents used to do that? Who cares what your parents did? Your parents are not Allah. Your parents, they learn from someone. You teach me and tell me the sources of what you learn, and I'll take it or leave it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, and like I said, guys, this is a conversation that's ongoing, and it's a conversation that's ongoing that I think will concertina. There'll be times when it broadens out, so we're addressing, you know, maybe issues that a lot of people feel. Like next week, we're talking about the hijab, so make sure you guys sign up for that, inshallah. And then, you know, then we have loads of things to focus on. So with that being said, I would like to thank the panelists. We are going to go to Q&A, but I just at this point would like to thank the panelists really sincerely and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala rewards you all for your time. I know it's not easy to take time out of your schedule and with the kids and with the lockdown and everything to come together like this, but I've been speaking to the guests and we want this to continue. So those of you who are watching this and you feel that this is a valuable space and that these conversations are beneficial, then my plea to you, my invitation to you, is for you to help us to make this something that continues. And how you can do that is by becoming a patron of the virtual salon. So there's a link here that I'm going to share with you, and I'll be emailing it out as well. But basically, you can help to support this conversation to continue, but just £5 a month to continue having these conversations, allowing us to produce content, to get it up onto YouTube, which all costs money, by the way. And also to thank our panelists, you know, and to be able to have, you know, different forms, podcasts, videos, interviews. We're up for it if you are. So if you feel that this is important and this is something that you want to see continue, please, inshallah, take note of that link. Go ahead. Even if it's just at the £5 level, we want to have these conversations. We want to have a town hall with you, where we can come together and everybody can unmute and everyone can be on video and we can go for it, go for it, go for it. If you're a patron, you get to do stuff like that. If you're a patron, you get free entry into our special events like our hijab conversation next week and the marriage one after that, which is going to be fire. So I suggest that you go to that link, inshallah, after this, and please join up as a patron. And the patrons will be the ones, inshallah, in the future who get to come to these special meetings that we have and actually come on and speak and be part of the panel and everything. So that's my spiel. So inshallah, I'm going to stop the video here because we're going to go to the group and then we're going to start another one, inshallah. So thank you so much, everyone. I'm going to stop this right here. Enjoyed this conversation and you would like to become part of the virtual salon family, consider becoming a patron. From just £5 a month, you can get access to our chat community, to be invited to our live sessions, and get exclusive content that we only create for our patrons. Be part of the movement. Sign up on Patreon today.